Welcome back to the Better Than Best Academy. You're in for a treat. I know I say this every week, but I feel like every week the guests are getting better and better. Today's guest, nothing short of extraordinary. And I feel like we're very similar in what we help people with. So I know that this conversation is going to be really interesting. But my guest today is named Anna. She is a burnout coach. And before I sit there and try to say all the great things about her, I'd rather let her introduce herself. So, hey, Anna, how are you?
I'm just getting my drink because I'm all about hydration. So, speaking of which, I'm a neurolinguistic programming coach, but I'm also a biohacker. So I'm really interested in how we can optimize not just our mind, but body as well. Hence the constant hydration. So, yeah. And in terms of coaching, I focus on helping people go from being burnt out to re-energizing themselves. And I do this by using NLP and biohacking in three specific areas, which is working with the subconscious, the biology, and also the way they schedule their time and the way they work. So that's me.
I love that. Is it Burnout Broccoli or Broccoli Burnout? What's the name of your club? It's intriguing. So right away, I'm like, I would love for you to kind of explain a little bit of what that is and how you came up with that.
Sure. So the company is Burnout Broccoli and, you know, hence the name of the club, the Broccoli Club. And the way that came about is when I was working on getting out of burnout myself, one of the things that I had to do is get more greens into my diet. And I'm not a big fan, to be frank with you. So I was looking for something that's going to jive with my diet. And I picked broccoli. And broccoli and I have been best friends ever since.
I love that. It's so interesting. I actually, which it's funny because right off the bat, it's interesting to hear because I, for a while, did the whole carnivore thing for a while. So I definitely was like almost anti-greens. I understand the benefits of them. I'm definitely not going to bash you for your broccoli love because, I mean, obviously a good broccoli can do quite some for us. But I'm curious. So what was it about? Because I too love this topic of burnout and I want to make the most of our time because I know you don't have forever. But I'm so curious, why the topic of burnout? Why'd you choose burnout as your kind of your focus?
Because I think burnout is something that's been affecting my family. It's been affecting my friends. And at some point, I was just so angry because I saw people in my life suffering and going through it repeatedly. And it seemed like they couldn't break free from it. They were trying to get help from different people. I myself have tried a lot of different things, which were really great. And I'm really grateful to people who have helped me. But I had this question, am I ever going to gain my energy back? Am I ever going to be my normal self again? And nobody had that answer for me. And then I saw my family struggling and, you know, dealing with a lot of mental health issues. And I thought, well, gee, like, come on, this is super frustrating. There's got to be a way to feel better about this, right? There is no way that nobody has figured it out. So, you know, I had to go into this. And one of the reasons I became a coach myself is that I just wanted to help my loved ones. And, you know, some are suffering from addiction. Others are just workaholics, which is another type of addiction. And yeah, thankfully, I was able to, you know, learn to communicate with them better. Coaching is communication first and foremost. And that's been really helpful. I'm happy that I chose this path. Because at the very least, I'm able to help my loved ones because I'm the one who has the most patience to deal with them. And, you know, Red, I don't know if you've had to work with different professionals yourself in the past, but the truth is our loved ones are always going to be the people who have the most patience to keep dealing with us and not give up on us. And I think this is such a big part of what's wrong in society today. We're all so quick and so ready to just be like, I'm cutting this person out of my life, or, you know, I'm setting boundaries here, or I'm not dealing with anything that's making me uncomfortable. So that's how I'm protecting my mental health and whatever. But who's going to be out there actually helping our people and, you know, rebuilding our families and kind of bringing back this integrity and cohesion we had in these small social networks, which are families. Like, who cares about Facebook? Your first and foremost social network is your family.
I love that. That's so good. And I agree. I think family is extremely important, and it's a foundational piece of our community. And a lot of people will say the opposite. And I love that that's your mission. And it's so interesting that helping your loved ones is what got you into coaching. And now you're like, I just want to help anybody I can. And that's, and I agree. I feel the same way. Now, one thing I'd love to kind of dive into is, and you mentioned it in the little form you sent me, was what do you think is some of the most common misconceptions around burnout?
So number one misconception that I come across all the time is that people think, okay, I'm going to take a vacation and I'm going to be good. So they go on a vacation and they come back feeling kind of okay for a couple of months. And then suddenly things aren't great again. And so we jump from one hoop to the next train to figure out where it's going to feel better, because maybe it's my job that sucks. Maybe I'm in the wrong relationship. Maybe it's not the right country for me, whatever. And so people keep trying different things because they don't realize, because nobody told them, that doesn't fix this kind of like crisis, identity crisis, this like, you know, quarter life, midlife crisis that's going on. And so people think, I'm just going to rest and I'll be okay. And this sucks, because if you just think you're going to take a vacation and be okay, that means you are not looking for ways to solve this. And that means you're now trapped in this eternal cycle of stress and being more sensitized to stress and just, you know, a life of burnout. I have people like that in my life. I know people like that. Do you?
Me too. Yeah. And I agree 100%. I feel like so many people don't think of, like, it's like treating the symptom. It's like putting a Band-Aid on a gunshot wound, I feel like, because I definitely agree. It's that idea of needing to address the root cause. But you said that was the first one. So I don't want to stop you from keep going.
Sure. Well, you know, you're in this topic as well. So, you know, I'm happy to hear your takes on everything too. Yeah, so that's the first one, taking a vacation. Second one is not having a plan. So just trying random things, right? And trying random things can be fun, for sure, but it's a long journey. It's a long journey of trying random things. Like for me, for example, I've gone to a massage therapist. I've gone to a therapist, a psychotherapist. Okay, I've worked with a nutritionist. I've done like a million different things. Paid for a hundred of different services just to like even wrap my head around what's going on. And one of the reasons I even got into this is because I thought, well, this really sucks. Why is that people have to jump through all these hoops and nobody can just tell them, okay, this is what's happening to you. It's going to take this long and you better do X, Y, Z. So not having a plan is definitely a point of failure if you're going through burnout, because you're going to start trying random little things here and there. Most of them are going to be half-hearted attempts at kind of, you know, feeling better. And they might work temporarily. And some of them will resolve certain issues. But what I found in my life personally is that if I really want a specific result and a specific outcome, in this case, to never burn out again, I better commit to a plan and follow a plan. Just like when you're doing fitness training, you gotta have a plan, right? You gotta stick to a routine. You gotta be serious about it. You commit to your goal. So I think there will be people out who are committing to never burning out again. And then there will be people who are actually totally okay with continuously burning out or be stuck in that cycle. And my heart goes out to them. I feel really bad for them, but it's everyone's personal choice, first and foremost.
For sure. I agree. And to piggyback off of that idea, when you don't have a plan, you plan to fail kind of thing. I feel like to add to that, it's a personalized plan, like a tailor-made plan. Because what I've seen is not everybody's the same. And some people may think that, oh, if I just do all the things that the people I see on the internet do, then it'll work. But then they don't find, like you said, that commitment, because it's another trend. Like for me, you see all the cold plunges going on right now. And I'm like, yeah, that's helpful. One, if it's something you stick to and it's something that actually you find benefits with. But also, I feel like, to kind of dig a little deeper, I feel like we as people will fall in love with the almost addicted to the feelings, the negative feelings of being burnt out. And like, and it comes to like, when you talk about workaholics, I think about myself being a former workaholic. And it was like, you get in such this high adrenaline, this fight or flight mode, and you get stuck in that for so long that when you come down from that, you almost think something's wrong. For instance, when it came to lockdowns and everything, and we no longer could go to a job and do all these things, like that's when I really went through my big epiphany of burnout. And I was like, wait, so you mean I'm burned out? I didn't even know I was burned out, because I just enjoyed, I thought everyone was always stressed and always overwhelmed and always going on 10 and always tired. But it's so interesting when you think about it that way. But yeah. So we got your first one was that people need to not just do the temporary fixes. People don't need to just go for the vacation one time and think it's going to fix it. And then your second one was, if you have no plan, obviously you're going to fail. So is there a third one?
There is. Awesome. There is a bunch of them, but let's do a third one. Yeah, let's do three, just so people can digest and process.
For sure.
So the third one I'm going to pick is probably going to be a really common one also, is people believe that you can't burn out doing what you love. And this one is a really pernicious subconscious pattern, because I've met a lot of folks who actually have burnt out repeatedly while doing some of the most meaningful work in their life. So to give you an example, I was one of those people where I had the best job, best team, best people around me doing something I love. And it came to me as such a surprise that I kind of stopped being able to function. And then I've talked to a lot of people while coaching, right, while doing sales and just getting on those calls and getting to know people. And some of them have quit their jobs because they thought, it's the job that's not fulfilling me, and that's why I'm burnt out. There isn't an alignment between my values and the job, which, you know, is a part of it. But again, to your point, a bit of a symptom. And so they'll go to a different field. Maybe they'll work in climate tech, which is, okay, now I'm fixing the world. Now, you know, I'm doing something meaningful. And then what you hear from them is that, oh, you know, burnout. Yeah, everybody's burnt out in climate tech. Oh, yeah, everyone's burnt out like at least three times. Oh, yeah, everyone is always burnt out. It's like so normal. And, you know, that's, to me, insane. And to piggyback on this third one, which is believing you can't burn out doing what you love, another one is that you can absolutely be oblivious to how much suffering you're undergoing, and you can be in love with your misery, is what I say. And, you know, to your point, like you said, oh, not everyone is always at the 10 and always stressed and always, oh, that's weird. I thought that was normal.
Being the stress and the burnout that you're going through, I think that's so huge. And I've seen the same thing in the little, I haven't been as focused on burnout for as long, but even just in this little bit of time, I've noticed we're so unaware. And I think that's why it's important for those listening and watching right now to get those coaches and to have those conversations. And it's so important, because you don't know what you don't know. And it's like, it's important. I heard it said this way earlier when I was listening to something else. Like, we need those mirrors, but more than just the mirror that we can see and what we can see, we also need those social mirrors, those people that are going to be real with us, that are going to say, like, I always say it, like, if there's broccoli in my teeth, I would hope I have people in my life that would tell me and not let me walk around oblivious. And I feel like that's how it is with burnout, is we can be oblivious to our pain sometimes, because we've gotten so used to dealing with it. And it's so interesting to me. And there's many ways that I could go, but I'm gonna stick to the path. One thing that you mentioned was you're an NLP practitioner, right? That's super interesting. I'm actually going through a course right now to get certified in NLP. So I'm starting. Oh, nice. I'm in the earlier stages, so I'm still learning. So I'm curious. This is kind of a twofold question. Kind of explain to people, because it's still fairly new. A lot of people don't know what NLP is. But if you could do like the quick summary of what NLP is and how you were using that to help people overcome burnout.
Well, I think the easiest way to explain neurolinguistic programming is that we all have ways of thinking about stuff, and it's all living inside of our head. And we are largely oblivious to it, and it's driving the majority of our decisions. And then occasionally we notice stuff, but most of the time we don't. And the easiest way to analyze those patterns is through ways of speaking. So you'll be talking about certain things a certain way, and that will indicate, okay, this is what you believe about a certain topic, thing, or way of doing things. And so we get so used to thinking and doing things a certain way that sometimes we don't realize how much those things hinder us. So, for example, I was doing a live with someone recently, and we were talking about just, you know, some addictions from like, you know, milder ones, like being addicted to coffee and how people talk about themselves. So someone might say, oh, I'm so addicted to coffee. And when people say that, it means that they've develop an identity around consuming coffee. They've developed an identity around being addicted to it. And they've developed an identity around seeing it as an almost necessary and almost positive thing. Hence, embracing it in such a, you know, way that they can even say it in this really forward fashion. And so these are the obstacles on the path of someone changing, because when we start changing, we have to do things in a different way. But okay, this is a question to our listeners. Do you think it's going to be easy for you to change if you already have an idea and a model of something being really positive and being your identity? Probably not, right? So what are we doing as NLP people? We are reprogramming those beliefs. And first and foremost, we are making them obvious and apparent. Here is another example of how we get programmed. People who watch Netflix know that there is a common way of describing watching a lot of it, binging Netflix. People will be asking each other, what are you binging tonight? Wow, it's like, okay, so we've assumed this identity in a positive light. We embraced it to the extent where we openly utilize it in our day-to-day conversation. Binging, blah, blah, blah. Can you imagine in the past talking this way about anything like food with your friends? So, buddy, what are you binging tonight? You know, are you doing any like throwing up later too, maybe?
Just crazy.
Right? And we're being programmed. We are being programmed by ourselves, our friends, the corporations out there. I mean, everybody understands that in the end of the day, no one cares about you. And so the reason Netflix is doing this is not because they're cool and awesome and they want you to have a great life. They're doing this because vice is what sells with ease, because it's the path of least resistance. And with these subconscious programs, a lot of them are unfortunately also ways and paths of least resistance. And so when we start becoming more conscious of these programs, then we can also pick the path that is the path of more resistance, but also more reward, more gratification, better life in the end, right?
For sure. Totally. I totally agree. And once you've realized the matrix, I guess some people could say it that way, but once you've realized that, it's so hard to unsee it. And I'm sure you feel the same way, especially with loved ones. It's like once your eyes have been open, it's hard to watch someone else go down that path. And yeah, I agree. I feel like it's our job as NLP practitioners, as coaches, is to help people navigate and almost open their eyes to the perception of the reality, because a lot of times people aren't living the reality. They're living their perception of what they think is the reality. And I'm curious to, and I just want to make sure we're good with our time. So I will run with the next questions. But if you do want to stay in one space, definitely let me know. But another thing that you mentioned was values and moral code violations. So I'm curious, how do values and more specifically moral code violations lead to burnout?
Yeah, that's an excellent point. So by the way, neither psychotherapy nor NLP nor any of those other frameworks have a way of resolving any moral dilemmas or a framework for that. They're just sort of tools. In the absence of a broader anchoring framework, those tools can be used in any possible way, which is what we're seeing, because a lot of NLP can be used, for example, to do unethical types of sales.
Exactly.
Sure. Okay. Right. So all of that psychotherapy is just re-traumatizing a lot of people or leading them down the path of believing that certain things are totally normal. But when it comes to these moral aspects, I think for me, where the shoe dropped is I started practicing Falun Gong a few years back. It's a meditation practice of mind and body. So there is the cultivation aspect where you try to become a better person, adhere to the principles of truthfulness, compassion, and tolerance. And then, you know, the meditation aspect strengthens your body. They work hand in hand. And this practice, you know, it comes from China originally, but there it's persecuted by the Communist Party. And having come from Eastern Europe myself, a former communist bloc country, I was always interested in trying to understand what happened to our people. How could things go wrong in such a tremendous, massive way? And I've been studying history for ages. But it wasn't until I started practicing the spiritual path that I started understanding what's actually been going on. And I realized that our people have been traumatized by an ideology that did not have the underlying moral code. And they've been victimized by this surface idea that you're going to have equality and nice life, but, you know, having no moral code on the back end, so to speak. So destruction of these traditional values has led to a society of turmoil, people turning against one another. And that happened in China, too. That's why Falun Gong is persecuted there. That's why practitioners are put in concentration camps, because they have this guiding framework, spiritual framework, which is keeping them healthy, is anchoring them to something that is really meaningful for them. So for me, when I started practicing, right, suddenly everything started clicking. And I realized you need a bigger thing onto which you're going to bolt all these other techniques and tools and whatever. You got to have an underlying fabric of some kind, you know. And we're so arrogant these days. We just keep inventing things left and right, thinking, okay, the AI is going to figure things out for us, or, you know, I'm just going to get really good at sales and whatever it may be. But beneath it all, I think we abandoned some really fundamental, really basic, simple things that we should be doing, right? And, you know, whether it's the Judeo-Christian values, whether it's the Eastern Confucian ones, like the whole humanity shares the same moral code, underlying moral fabric. And now that we don't have a whole lot of that, it's kind of old-fashioned and, you know, not in vogue anymore. Suddenly, we're seeing the rise in mental health issues, social issues, addiction. People are so lonely, especially red people of our generation, so lonely, yet seemingly can't figure out a way out of it. And I believe that it all has to do with the fact that this underlying fabric of these moral codes has been disintegrating. And I feel like if we want to feel better, we need to come back to some of these basics and stop burning ourselves out. Because I think burnout in a big way is a disconnect from what's true, what's real, what's meaningful, and pursuit of more surface things. And I've been there, so I'm not judging.
Same, likewise, and I agree. I'm actually, my faith is in Christianity, so I definitely agree when it comes to tapping into a higher power, and you need that moral compass, and 100% agree with that idea of we're seeing such a rise in mental health and just this sense of despair because they're longing for something. Something's out there. If only you would just go and find it. And I think that's great that you have that rooted in what you're doing. And I'm curious to kind of get to know a little bit more about you, because I'm sure a lot of times when you hop on these calls, it's more so about your work and less so about kind of like the mission behind it. But I like to ask this question. And so say you're at the end of your life, and you might have heard this question before, so you might be prepared for it. But say you're at the end of your life, like you've lived the life that you've wanted to and then some. What, and you're on your deathbed or you're on your death couch. I know some people don't want to think of dying in an awful place. But anyways, you're at the end of your life and you're surrounded by your loved ones. What do you want to be remembered for?
I've never thought of that thread, so I'm completely unprepared.
That's okay. What comes to mind?
I think what comes to mind is I would love people to remember that she was the person that was doing her best to try to be truthful, compassionate, and tolerant. You know, like she tried her best. Not perfect, but she tried.
I love it. And that's great. And from the little bit that I've seen, I feel like you're definitely on your way doing your best. And you're doing work that's actually impacting people. And I feel like that's, you don't see that as much lately, I feel like, especially in the entrepreneur space. It's like you said, you see a lot of people that get so driven by the money or driven by the materialism that could come from it. Because, you know, who doesn't want that idea of being rich? I get it. I understand. That seems like a cool, great thing to strive for. But at the same time, like underneath it all is such a bigger thing to tap into. And there's this community aspect, there's this making a difference. And I think that's so, so important. So I only have two more questions for you.
Beautiful, let's roll.
We're doing good with time. Okay, awesome. So before I say the two questions, obviously, I'm sad that we didn't have more time because I feel like we're just getting started. We'll have to do a part two or something. Maybe we'll do an Instagram live or something. That would be great.
Oh, that would be wonderful.
I would love to do that. Or maybe a Twitter space. I don't know. I'm still learning Twitter, but that would be great to get one of those in the books for sure. But before I ask the next two questions, I want to pause and let people know, like, we're going to link all your stuff in the show notes or wherever they're watching or listening. Definitely go give Anna a follow, subscribe, do all the things, because she's doing similar work to me, but in her own unique way. And I think it's great. And I'm always going to champion more people in the space and continue doing what you're doing. But with that said, I like to flip the script and ask my guests if they have any questions for me.
I do, actually. So I feel like we kind of connected because you're on a mission too. And I wanted to know what that mission is. What are you about?
Oh man, what's my mission? Man. I would say, so it's funny because my mission has taken so many different routes throughout the years, but I feel like it's really refined in the last year or so. And I would say that I'm on a mission to help people see themselves how they truly are. Like you mentioned identity, and I really resonate with that strong because I was someone who grew up feeling like I needed to perform and to earn my approval and acceptance. And that led to me, you know, wanting to be on stages. I had a rap career. Like I did all the performance thing. I was very creative, but I also wanted to be seen. And like, I felt like I needed to earn all that. And I came to this realization, like we aren't human doings, we're human beings. And I had to understand who I truly was outside of what I do in order to do things great. I wasn't defined by my successes or failures there, but I was truly defined by who I was and tying it with my faith, believing, you know, like I'm a child of God and I believe like my identity and is huge. And I just want to help people discover that for themselves. ultimately, I want to help them have that safe place to be seen and to be heard. But specifically here recently, I've just got this newer passion for men specifically, because I know how it is to kind of grow up not being super macho. Like, obviously, I played sports, and I still love sports and working out, and I love the biohacking and all that stuff. But I always had this level of like being in tune with my emotions, obviously not driven by my emotions, because we know in LP that we aren't our feelings. But anyways, that's a whole other thing in itself. But just being, creating that community and that space for men to be both tough and tender, and to realize like they can be wholly big, strong men and boast in their weakness, because it's okay to have feelings and to express them and to work through them. And I feel like it's kind of missing in a space in general. Cause I mean, I know growing up, I never really had other guy friends that be like, man, I'm going through something. And now I'm in this great space. Now I've cultivated a group of men actually in my church, and we're just not afraid to share when life isn't beautiful and we're not having to pretend to be so strong. Like, you're allowed to be weak, and you're allowed to overcome that weakness by surrounding yourself with people that are going to help you actually heal it. Like we mentioned in burnout, like getting to that root cause. But that's a little bit of my mission.
That's pretty cool. And I'm also surprised that you were into performing and rap music too. That's good, because I'm actually curious. It's something I've been thinking about, and let's explore it together, I guess, because you're a creative person. So what's the role of creativity in building a business?
Man, I think it's a foundational piece, especially now. If you're building something that's connected to a personal brand, for instance, I mean, like obviously what you're building is very like, you're kind of the face of it. And I feel like having that creativity to not only tell stories in a way that captivates people, and because we're given so much noise, like obviously, like we're bombarded with noise and nonsense and craziness, whether it's TikTok, whatever socials that you spend your time on. And I feel like as business owners, especially business owners that are in the service-based businesses that are really trying to make an impact, I feel like it's crucial for us to find ways to creatively stand out. But more so, I feel like creativity is problem solving. And at its core, it's problem solving. Even when you're like, for instance, if you hear a song, like a song probably came from a place where someone was feeling such an intense emotion that they had to write about it to express it, to get it out of them in order to, it was almost their therapy in a sense, I feel like. And obviously I'm a proponent of therapy and coaching and all the things like that. But I feel like, yeah, I feel like creativity is definitely a core element when it comes to growing a business.
That's pretty interesting. Yeah, for sure, for sure. What are some of the ways you like to bring out your creativity after a long day of doing things that just need to be done?
Man, I would say, so for me, you probably see my background, the drums. I play drums for my church, and that's kind of like a creative outlet that's not necessarily the coaching and the focus on the business. So that's one way. And then, oh man, I like to cook. I mean, I'm not super amazing at it, but I feel like I was always one of those people, and I attribute that to my dad, because my dad would get really creative in the kitchen when we were growing up, even to the point where like he would present the meals on the plate like we're at some kind of like five-star. It definitely wasn't five-star eating by any means, but he, you know, you just take that like extra step. And he's also into writing as well. Like he went to journalism for college and was a sports writer, but also very into like the storytelling aspect. So I would say, yeah, I find myself either playing drums or making various music now. It's funny because I rapped for 10 years. So I had a 10-year rap career, and that was like my identity kind of thing. And now I don't rap anymore, because it's just, I kind of grew away from it, but I still find such a joy in listening to those hip hop songs with the great lyrics and the storytelling. So I feel like even enjoying the art is just as creative as making the art at times. So that would be, I guess, another way that I do that.
That's pretty cool. Yeah. Thank you for sharing. That's awesome.
That's awesome. All right. So hopefully we're still doing good with time. I have one last question for you. I'm really excited. So as of 2 recordings ago, I started a new little segment at the end where I have the previous guest ask a question to my current guest.
And oh, that's so cool.
And then obviously you'll do that afterwards, but so I'll play the clip. So this is the question from my previous guest.
My question is going to be, give me 3 words. I'm going to ask for 3 words to describe how you feel about your past, about your present, and about your future. So you'll give one
word. Ooh.
One word for each and why.
So past, present, future.
Yeah, one word for each and why you chose that word. That's a good question.
Okay, my past word is going to be sad. And that's because, you know, especially being an immigrant kid, I was pretty sad for a while. And, you know, thankfully, when I started practicing Falun Gong, that helped to pull me out of that depression. And then over the years, I kind of found my joy and learned to be joyous. I have this sculpture that I did when I was younger in school. And it was like the sad angel with like an upside down frown. And I found it recently and I looked at it and I was like, oh my gosh, it's so sad. This is awful. We're going to have to fix it. I carved him a new smile so that he can be a happy, joyful angel now. So let's say future is joyful and present is learning to be joyful. It's not one word, but if there is one word that find for learning. Yeah, learning is a good one. Yeah, thank you.
I love it. So sad was past, learning is present, and joyful is future. So cool. That's so interesting, man. I'm so glad that I stole the idea from a podcast I listened to get this, because I like to pride myself on great questions. So I love to hear great questions because they make me start thinking, how can I ask even better questions? Because I feel like that's the key to learning is asking great questions. So before we wrap up, I'm going to ask you that same question: is what is one question that you want to leave for the next guest that I have on the show?
So my question would be,
was that not a fire conversation? I know you are going to leave better than before you tuned into it. And if you enjoyed this conversation, be sure to hit the subscribe button on screen. And if you want to continue watching more inspiring and encouraging content, you can click here. If you really got something out of this, or if you have any feedback so that we can make this show even better, don't hesitate, drop a comment below. As always, thank you, and I look forward to seeing you again soon.